The play Dear Woman is a work of righteous vengeance. In fact, when you go into it, you're warned that it contains extreme, graphic, historical, and contemporary violence. It's neither polite nor apologetic. It's about the estimated thousands of Indigenous women caught in the ongoing murder, abduction, and human trafficking, a situation in Canada that's often denied by the authorities. And it's told through the eyes of a woman whose younger sister has disappeared. Playwright Tara Bagan spoke with Away's Rudy Bremer about finding the voice of that character, Lila, who is ex-army.
I'm Tara Bagan. I'm Lekapmach, which is an interior Salish nation on the west side of the Great Rocky Mountains. And I am the playwright and producer of Article 11's Dear Woman. Dear Woman is a play that I knew that I had to create in response to primarily to the sheer volume of Indigenous women and girls who are missing and or murdered in this colonized nation of Canada. There's always a number that's assigned to how many Indigenous women and girls are missing or murdered, and I don't think it's ever accurate because, and Lila mentions this in the play, the commonly kind of repeated number is actually only a tally from 1980 to present day. So there are, I mean, as soon as there was colonizers here, our women were being, things weren't always good, right? The truth of the matter is that Indigenous women and girls have been treated as disposable in this country called Canada for a very long time. And that has been ignored for a very long time. And a big part of the reason for that is that the people in power are not only contributing to the murders and misuse and abductions of our women and girls, but they are actively participating and they are covering it up. And the first time that was ever proposed to me, it hit me really hard, and it fell into this kind of really dark place of knowing in me. And the more and more I've been speaking about this kind of thing more openly, the more I've had people tell me of their exact experiences with people like law enforcement or politicians or other men who are in power who have mistreated Indigenous women and girls. So it's not getting solved because the truth of it is so deeply seated and so vile that to look at that, I don't think a lot of people could cope with their lives if they knew that reality exists in Canada right now.
Within Dear Woman, Lila talks about going to several rallies, but there's one in particular where she's speaking about an older lady who's talking about her daughter who went missing, and Lila has this kind of realization that this woman, this mother, has known her daughter missing longer than she's known her in her life. Mm-hmm. And that quite literally, because this young girl had gone missing prior to, is it 1980?
Mm-hmm, 1980.
Yeah. She, in a very fundamental way, doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it is one of multiple moments in Dear Woman that is sort of, it's a gut punch.
That's the kind of thing, the degrees of missingness that can really hit you hard, right? Like there are 1,600 known missing and or murdered Indigenous women and girls since 1980. Imagine all of those who their family didn't even trust in the authorities enough to let them know that their girl was missing, you know, and like all of that history that simply falls away and of course gets carried by the family and probably by their immediate community. But I mean, there are stories that we simply don't tell because we understand that oftentimes the authorities are the aggressors. Dear Woman is also a piece that I wrote as a response to some colonizer plays that are about our Indigenous women and girls going missing and murdered. So there have been quite a few critically lauded culturally appropriative theatrical works by by white folk. And that always causes injury, of course, among Indigenous people when those kinds of works go forth to such great esteem, because once again, the colonizer is profiting from the decimation of our people. So it ain't a comedy, folks. it's a kind of just a one-woman performer powerhouse piece that I wrote most of and then got stuck. And then I read it aloud to my love and collaborating partner, Andy Morrow. And he realized the actor we needed to invite in, which is Cherish Violet Blood. And once he pointed out to me that I was really writing this for Cherish, I was able to finish the draft. So Cherish's strength and humor is woven right into the character itself.
You say that it's not a comedy. There's very definitely this humor baked right into the script. And and it's a humor that I found really familiar. Like, Lila has this way of speaking that's quite irreverent and quite combative towards her audience, I think.
Yeah, I agree. She kind of says right away, like, this is for me and for my people, and if you're not me and my people, you be quiet and you listen up, because it's a privilege for you to be here. Which is, you know, not typically the way that Canada likes to market itself internationally. So we have yet to play on home soil, but we sure are excited about coming over and playing for your mob.
One of my favorite sort of aspects was when she has this realization that she is a deer woman, like, mm-hmm. and that the deer has breathed into her. And
one of the aspects of the character Lila's life and upbringing that wasn't deliberate, but as colleagues have told me about their own plays, my plays are smarter than me. Something that I appreciate about who Lila is and how she arrived to me and to the page is that she grows up with a white father who's just cherished by her, who's a wonderful caretaker, and she lives, you know, off reserve, so away from her home community. But she has a connect to her father and to her sister and to her Auntie Gary. So she has all of these connections, like she's a bridge person the way that I am. So she has a way of creating her own Indigenous spiritualism in the world. And I really feel like the reason that she understands that she actually is a deer woman, a powerful woman with antlers, and she can defend her own, I think that is a direct result of her kind of patchwork spiritualism that she walks through the world with, and the way that she understands how things are and the power that she has to shape the future.
I think that, yes, that was possibly what I was kind of feeling about her. And also this really kind of, there's a beautiful symmetry about the fact that when Lila is being taught to hunt and going out hunting with her father, and he teaches her that under no circumstance do you hunt doe, you don't hunt the female deer. And it brings this incredible symmetry. Like that was a thought that kind of connected much later. And I think there were quite a few moments where it was a play that stuck with me. I walked away from it thinking about it more and more and sort of having these moments of like, oh, look how clever. Like, look at... And Lila is really, like, she goes to a lot of effort to be like, not even, like, wouldn't it be great if this was the narrative, but it's not. Like, stop trying to read these moments.
Yeah,
for sure. So as much as she tells you not to, I absolutely was.
Oh, that, you know, it's a real honor that you took the time to actually to read the play. I don't remember the last time I've spoken with anyone who covers the arts who actually read the play. It's really incredible.
Well, what do you think Australian audiences would get from Dear Woman?
Oh, I guess it's hard to guess that. I mean,
what do you hope we get from it?
I hope that the response is at least a tenth as enthusiastic as it was when we played the show this June in Aotearoa in Wellington. And there were some really beautiful Australian artists present who not only were very excited about the show, but came back to see it again and engaged us in really meaningful dialogue throughout the festival that we were there for, the Kia Mau Festival, the Tawata Productions Festival. And we had the great honor of having Rachel Maza in the audience and Lily Shearer, and they were just so, I don't want to say effusive because that kind of smacks of insincerity, but they were just kind of lit up about it. They were so excited, and it gave us really big hope that this global Indigenous network is something that we have to continue working towards reinforcing and reestablishing with every opportunity.
Now, Lila speaks a lot about intent within the play, and I guess something that another Indigenous playwright, Samantha Brown, had said when talking about your play is it questions what we're willing to do and where good intentions, the fact that good intentions may actually lead you onto a path of dehumanization.
You know, the first time that we actually read the play aloud in front of an audience, it was at a new works festival called the Wisagichak Festival. It's a Native Earth festival here on Turtle Island. First time we read it, you know, that kind of by now almost like cliche expression of all of the air sucked out of the room? That really happened. And I felt it was a strange kind of communing because I felt the audience pull their bodies away from the stage at a certain moment in the play. And I don't want to give away any spoilers, but Lila does say and do some quite shocking things. And a lot of people were very upset by ultimately the frankness with which she approaches a certain brand of violence. And I'm certainly not, as a kid I had a heck of a temper, but I'm not a violent person and I don't ever consider violence to be something that would solve any problems. But something that has come out a lot, especially when we have Indigenous folks in the house, is that this is a piece where someone's darkest fantasies can have a kind of catharsis without actually being irreversible.
It speaks to that. There's a long history and quite a significant canon of white playwrights who are effectively writing what Lila calls torture porn, putting the vulnerabilities of Indigenous women on stage.
I felt some feelings, and so I am absolved. Last year was Canada's 150th birthday. I didn't get any cake. But what happened was all of a sudden there's all of this funding for quite major cultural institutions to invite Indigenous people in with their works and to collaborate. And, you know, it was considered to be this time of great opportunity by the colonizer. But what in fact happened was many of our artists were brought into these institutions where they've never been invited before. And so there was, you know, varying levels of success on those collaborations and zero understanding as to why, when those collaborations weren't 100% successful, why that was. And no doubt people came away, and I don't know because I'm not in those institutions, but no doubt people within them who get to keep their job the following year thought, oh my goodness, like, oh, maybe that's what it's like then if we work with them, you know. And this year, the anniversary is over and the funding is gone. There are a lot of people who maintained a way of life and a level of income for one solid year that they may never touch again. So, in fact, that influx of strange money it's false, and it necessarily would have to be because we're this country that likes to pretend that we're super polite and kind and, oh, things are much worse in America, and yet nothing is reconciled here. I mean, we've been through this Truth and Reconciliation Commission here, and as recently as this weekend, I was speaking with white colleagues, and they have little to no understanding of what's even happening on their own home soil that they are here by leave of us.
Tara, for you, when it comes to working on something like Dear Woman, how do you remain sort of resilient?
I think that was probably one of the first things that you mentioned today, which is this shared kind of gallows humor that so many Indigenous people have, or, you know, as heavy as the subject matter is, the loudest, most laughingest rehearsal halls, I think, across the world are full of our people, you know, because we've had to develop that survival mechanism. So, cracking the raunchiest jokes, and, you know, staying connected to family. I have a very resilient, very tiny mom who's just kind of a miracle. And she just, you know, totters along in her house and watches her shows, you know, like so many of our matriarchs who has survived so much. She has somehow stayed gentle, and she will always guide me. And she's also guiding her grandchildren, my sister's kids. So connecting with generations and keeping humor in the room is really the biggest part of it. And, you know, connecting with Indigenous artists across the world really helps too, because it helps you to remember when you're feeling really isolated that actually there's another half-breed just like you somewhere across the globe who's going through something very, very similar. So that's been a great help.
You've mentioned that in order for this play to be finished, for the draft to be finished, you needed to kind of know that Cherish was going to be the actress. Can you see this being a work that, like, how do you see this work sort of being performed by someone else when she's so kind of integral?
I'm not sure yet. I mean, I imagine it's possible. She has been the only one to fully perform the entire work. Before we premiered it, I was working with excerpts of it at a festival called Impact, which is run by a company called Empty Space in Kitchener-Waterloo. My company, Article 11, does this kind of public space creation lab occupation thing where we invite in Indigenous collaborators who we think are exciting. And we spend the whole day in a public place that has been designed to be a performance space, and public can come anytime. And we collaborate throughout the day, and by the evening we present something. It's a very embryonic kind of performance. And sometimes people bring in, you know, poetry or song or whatever that might be, a visual art or a concept or a newspaper article, any little thing, any little seed. And there was a certain kind of voice in Lila that I wanted to understand it better. And we had a brilliant Haudenosaunee actor with us, Sherry Miracle, and an incredibly beautiful Anishinaabe dancer, Serene Carson Fox. And so Sherry read the text while Serene embodied the absent sister in the script. So I very much wanted to look at the presence of that absence and see what that means for Lila. So it was a really fantastic opportunity just to hear Lila's voice in an actor quite unlike Cherish. So I've begun to trust that the plays will become what they need to become. So if there comes a time when maybe either Cherish is finished with being Lila, or, you know, who knows, what something will come to pass. Maybe in 50 years when I'm, you know, hunched over and don't want to direct, and Cherish can't pull off playing 40 anymore. If there's another generation who's excited about approaching it, then I assume it will be because it's the right people who came along to do that.
Playwright Tara Bagan speaking with Away's Rudy Bremer. And her play, Dear Woman, is on at Carriage Works from the 16th to the 20th of January as part of the Sydney Festival. And a warning, it does contain extreme graphic, historical and contemporary violence.